So that depends upon how the contemplation before the path was done. So if the contemplation is done on a signless aspect, then the path also gets the name signless and so on. However, in the Bodhisambhita, insight knowledge is expressed as follows. It is expressed firstly as the void liberation by its liberation and so on. And it's a little confusing here because we understand that liberation is a name of path. But the Bodhisambhita Magga is telling us that the contemplation is called signless and so on. But actually, it is not the contemplation, but the, it is not the contemplation, but the path is called, in Pali, vimokha, liberation. So liberation means path and not contemplation. But in the Bodhisambhita Magga, it is said that the contemplation is called liberation. Contemplation is called liberation, so on. So there is some grounds for confusion here. So how the path gets its name depends upon here on the contemplation made before the path is attained. So on the next page, it is however literally void and desireless, and it is at the moment of noble path that the liberation is distinguished, and that is done according to insight knowledge's way of arrival at the path. That means it is done by way of insight as source. So we take insight or contemplation as a source for the name which the path gets. If the insight or if the contemplation is signless, then the path is also called signless. If the contemplation is desireless, then the path is also called desireless. If the contemplation is voidless, then path is also called voidless, void or voidness. So, how the path gets these names depends on how the contemplation was done. And then it said that on paragraph 66, it becomes a condition for the classification of noble persons in seven kinds. So we know that there are eight noble persons, right? Eight Ariya persons or noble persons. For the first stage two, for the second stage two, third stage two, and fourth stage two, they sort up the person who is at the moment of first path, and then the person after the first path, before the second path, then a person at the second path, and then another person after the second path, before the third path, and so on. So there are eight noble persons. But here, they are described in a different way, and so according to this list, there are seven kinds of noble persons. And these are what? The faith devotee, one. Two, one liberated by faith. Three, the body witness. The four, the both ways liberated. Five, the Dhamma devotee. The six, one attained to vision. And one, seven, one liberated by understanding. They are also, say, different kinds of noble persons mentioned in the Suttas and also in the Abhidhamma. And then description follows in the paragraph 75 and so on. Now, in paragraph 75, you see the number 4. Yeah. He is called both ways liberated when he has reached the highest fruition, that means arahantship, highest fruition after also reaching the immaterial jhanas. I don't find the word for also in the Pali, in the Pali Visuddhimagga. So we should just leave it out. So he is called both ways liberated when he has reached the highest fruition after reaching the immaterial jhanas. That means he may practice samatha meditation first and then get the four immaterial jhanas. And then he may contemplate on the four material jhanas or some other formations, and then he gets enlightenment. So he is called liberated in both ways. When a man brings them to mind as not self, and having great wisdom acquires the faculty of understanding, he becomes a Dhamma devotee, and so on. So, so there are these seven kinds of Arya persons or noble persons. And then paragraph 76. Now, when he brings formations to mind as impermanent, the fifth faculty is in excess in him, and so on. So I've already talked about that. And then paragraph 77 and 78 are the description of the or what explanation of the terms, like in Pali, Satta, Nusari, Satta, Vimoda, and so on. Now, let us go to paragraph 79. This knowledge of equanimity about formations is the same in meaning as the two kinds that precede it. Hence, the ancient said, this knowledge of equanimity about formations is one only and has three names. At the outset, it has the name of knowledge of desire for deliverance. In the middle, it has the name knowledge of reflection. At the end, when it has reached its culmination, it is called knowledge of equanimity about formations. So these three are actually one kind of knowledge. But in the books, they are described as three kinds of knowledge. So the knowledge of equanimity about formations is one only and has three names. So they can be called knowledge of equanimity about formation, or they can be called by their respective names. And then, at the beginning of paragraph 80, you know, something is missing, and that is, it is said in the text also. So that translation of that is missing. I mean, in the original, it is that Pali Yampi Votan. So that is missing here. So it is said in the text also, because the following is a formation from the text. How is it that understanding of desire for deliverance, of reflection, and of composure is knowledge of the kinds of equanimity about formations, and so on? So it is taken from the Patisamhita Magga. And then explanation of it in paragraph 81. Now let us go to paragraph 82. Furthermore, it may be understood that this is so from the following text, for this is said, desire for deliverance and contemplation of reflection and equanimity about formations, these things are one in meaning and only the latter is different. So this is another quotation that shows that these three are actually one. The next, insight leading to the emergence of the path. So we have read about that, read that. And then in paragraph 84, there is a description of how a yogi contemplates and how he emerges. That means how he becomes enlightened in many different ways. So the one is, after interpreting the internal, it emerges from the internal. After interpreting the internal, it emerges from the external. Three, after interpreting the external, it emerges from the external. Four, after interpreting the external, it emerges from the internal. 5. After interpreting the material, it emerges from the material. After interpreting the material, it emerges from the immaterial. After interpreting from immaterial, it emerges from immaterial. 8. After interpreting the immaterial, it emerges from the immaterial. 9. It emerges at one stroke from the 5 aggregates. 10. After interpreting as impermanent, it emerges from the impermanent. 11. After interpreting as impermanent, it emerges from painful. After interpreting as impermanent, it emerges from not self. And so on and so on. Now, here interpreting means just the same thing as I said, contemplating. Not really interpreting. So, contemplating the internal, it emerges from internal, external, and so on. We will read the first explanation in paragraph 85. Now, someone does his interpreting at the start with his own internal formations. That means he contemplates on his internal formations, material properties in his body, mental states in his mind, and so on. So, he does his interpreting at the start with his own internal formations. After interpreting them, he sees them. But emergence of the path does not come about through seeing the bare internal only, since the external must be seen too. So he sees that another's aggregates as well as unclung to formations, that means inanimate things, are impermanent, painful, not self. So here, first he contemplates on his body and on his mind. And then he contemplates on other person's aggregates, externally. So both internally and externally. And at one time he comprehends the internal, and at another time the external, because he cannot take internal and external at the same time. So at one time he will be contemplating on the formations of his own, and at other times on other people's formations. As he does so, insight joins with the path while he is comprehending the internal. It is said of him that after interpreting the internal, it emerges from the internal. So, in the beginning, he contemplates on his own formations. And then, he contemplates on another person's formations. So, he does this during his meditation, sometimes contemplating on his own and sometimes contemplating on others. And then, the emergence or the path will arise after he contemplates on his own or after he contemplates on another's formations, because it can come at any moment. So as he does so, insight joins with the path. That means path occurs while he is comprehending the internal. That means immediately after he is comprehending the internal. It is said of him that after interpreting the internal, it emerges from the internal. Then, if his insight joins with the path at the time when he is comprehending the external, that means immediately after comprehending the external, if the path arises, then it is said of him that after interpreting the internal, it emerges from the external. So this is just different ways of understanding how the emergence or how the path arises. Sometimes it may arise after the yogi has contemplated his own formations, and sometimes after contemplating on others' formations and so on. And then, paragraph 87. I think the others are not difficult to understand. When he has done his interpreting in this way, all that is subject to arising is subject to cessation. And so too, at the time of emergence, it is said that it emerges at one stroke from the 5 aggregates. Here, he does not take aggregates one by... Actually, he does not take the all five aggregates at one time. But vipassana knowledge or vipassana moments of consciousness arise very quickly, that they seem to be taken at one moment, but actually one aggregate is taken by each consciousness. He takes one, and then he takes another, and he takes another. He cannot take all five together. But since vipassana is so fast at that time, that it is said that he contemplates on them at one stroke. Actually, it cannot be that way. And the other explanations are not difficult to understand. Now, the author wants us to understand this knowledge very clearly, and so he gives us 12 similes. 12 similes should be understood in order to explain this insight leading to emergence and the kinds of knowledge that precede and follow it. Here is the list: the bat, the black snake, the house, the oxen, and the goat. How do you say that? Ghoul?
Ghoul.
Oh. It's like a ghost or...
Yeah.
Oh. The child, hunger and thirst and cold and heat and darkness and by poison too. Now, the number two should be not black snake, but cobra. The literal translation is black snake, but it is not used in that sense, actually. The Pali word is Kanha Sabha. So Kanha means black and Sabha means snake. But when these two words are joined to mean one animal, then it does not mean a snake which is black in color, but it means a cobra. Maybe cobras are generally black? No. But it doesn't matter whether we take it as cobra or just a black snake. And then the similes explain one by one. So let's read the first simile: the bat. There was a bat, it seems. She had alighted on a maduka tree, a certain tree, with five branches, thinking, "I shall find flowers or fruits here." She investigated one branch, but saw no flowers or fruits there worth taking. And as with the first, so too she tried the second, the third, the fourth, and the fifth, but saw nothing. She thought, "This tree is barren. There is nothing worth taking here." So she lost interest in the tree. She climbed up on a straight branch, and poking her head through a gap in the foliage, she looked upwards, flew up into the air and alighted on another tree. Herein, the meditator should be regarded as like the bat. The five aggregates of objects of clinging are like the maduka tree with the five branches. The meditator's interpreting of five aggregates is like the bat alighting on the tree. His comprehending the materiality aggregate and seeing nothing there worth taking. Comprehending the remaining aggregates is like our trying each branch and seeing nothing there worth taking. Trying the rest. His triple knowledge, beginning with desire for deliverance after he has become dispassionate towards the five aggregates, through seeing their characteristic of impermanence, etc., is like her thinking, this tree is barren, there is nothing worth taking here, and losing interest. His conformity knowledge, which comes after the knowledge of equanimity, his conformity knowledge is like her climbing up the straight branch. His change of lineage knowledge is like her poking her head out and looking upwards. His path knowledge is like her flying up into the air. His fruition knowledge is like her alighting in a different tree. And then there is another simile of the black snake. This simile has already been given in paragraph 49. But the application of the simile here is this: change of lineage knowledge is like throwing the snake away. Path knowledge is like the man standing and looking back whence he had come after getting free from it. Fruition knowledge is like his standing in a place free from fear he had got away. This is the difference. So we have read that simile, and I think this is to be added to that simile, because there the moments of change of lineage and others are not explained. So we can combine these two to get a whole simile. And then the other similes are explained, the house, the oxen, and so on. The last group, paragraph 102. Hunger, thirst, cold, heat, darkness, and by poison. These six similes are given for the purpose of showing that one with insight that leads to emergence tends, inclines, and leans in the direction of the supramundane state. So it is just to show that that person leans towards Nibbana or supramundane states. That is why it was said above. Now, next page, paragraph 109. That is why it was said above. When he knows and sees thus, his heart retracts, and coils from the three kinds of becoming, the four kinds of generation, the five kinds of destiny, the seven stations of consciousness, and the nine abodes of beings. His heart no longer goes out to them. So at this stage, Mahasisyara said, even if you try to send your thought to other objects, it will not go. You just want to be here on the object and not to the other objects. Just as water drops retreat and so on. But at this point he's called one who walks aloof with reference to whom it is said. And then what governs the difference in the noble paths, enlightenment factors, etc.? And this is also for us to understand how the enlightenment or how the path is governed by or determined, how the quality of path is determined by here, by vipassana and also by some others. Now, this knowledge of equanimity about formations governs the fact that the meditator keeps apart. It furthermore governs the difference in the number of the noble paths, enlightenment factors, path factors, and jhana factors, the mode of progress, and the kind of liberation. Here we explain later one by one. For while some elders say that it is the jhana used as the basis for insight, leading to emergence, that governs the difference in the number of enlightenment factors, path factors, and jhana factors, and some say that it is the aggregates, make the object of insight, that govern it, and some say that it is the personal bent or one's own wish that governs it. Yet it is, now let us leave out only, yet it is this preliminary insight and insight leading to emergence also that should be understood to govern it in their doctrine also. So we put two also there. Now, there are three opinions about it, how the path gets its name. So the first group of teachers say what? Now, it will be explained in the following paragraph. But let me tell you this. There are persons who do not have any jhanas, who do not practice any samatha meditation at all, but who practice vipassana meditation. And there are those who have jhana, but they don't use this jhana as the object of vipassana meditation. They have attained jhanas, but when they practice vipassana meditation, they do not contemplate on the jhanas, but they contemplate on other mental and physical phenomena. And there are others who have jhanas, but who do not use jhana at all when they practice meditation. So for them, the path that arises is like the first jhana. That means it has all the components of first jhana. I'll tell you again. You don't seem to understand, huh?
Could you explain a little bit about the jhana, though?
The jhanas are the... let me say, how do you call that? Higher states of consciousness. And jhanas are attained through the practice of samatha meditation, not through vipassana meditation. So you practice a diskasina meditation, or you practice a breathing meditation, and then you get, say, jhanas. So the jhanas are attained through the practice of samatha meditation. Now, a person who practices vipassana meditation may have not attained any of the jhanas at all. He is a pure vipassana meditator, so there are no jhanas for him. And there is another person who has jhana, who has attained jhana, but he didn't make use of jhana at all when he practiced meditation. There was vipassana meditation, so he is more or less like the other person, who has no jhana. And there is another person who uses his jhana when he practices vipassana meditation. That means he enters into jhana, but after emerging from that jhana, after getting out of that jhana, he does not use the jhana as the object of meditation, but he used the other formations as the object of meditation. So the path of such a person is said to resemble the first jhana. Now, there are five factors in first jhana: vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata, right? Initial application, sustained application, joy, happiness, one-pointedness of mind. Now, in the second jhana, four factors, right? In the third jhana, three factors. In the fourth jhana, two factors. In the fifth jhana, two factors. Now, when a person who has no jhana at all, or who does not use jhana in his practice of vipassana meditation, attains path, his path is accompanied by these five factors. You can find some of these in the eight factors of path. Right. What is the first factor? Right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. So these are all there with the first path. And so with the first path, we find vitaka is the right thought. Vitaka, vijara, piti, sukha, ekagata, all. So his path resembles the first jhana. Now, there is another person who practices, say, jhana, and then he reaches second, third, fourth, and fifth. So if he first practice jhana as a basis for vipassana, and then gets out of that jhana and takes the jhanas as the object of meditation, or other formations as object of meditation, and he gets path, then since he made second jhana or third jhana or fourth jhana or fifth jhana as the basis for vipassana, his path resembles second, third, fourth, fifth jhana. So if his path resembles second jhana, then one factor will be missing from the eight noble eightfold path. That is, vitakka will be missing there. And right thought is vitakka. And if it is the fourth jhana, what will be missing? Piti will be missing. And piti is one among the seven factors of enlightenment. So, So there are three opinions here. One teacher, or one group of teachers say that the jhana, which is make the basis for vipassana, is what determines the quality of path. Second group says that it is the jhana which is made the object of vipassana meditation that determines the path. And the third group says that it is the wish of the person which determines the quality of the path. So the first group emphasizes on the jhana which is make the basis for vipassana. That means first he enters into first jhana and then emerges from the first jhana and contemplates on jhana or other formations. Now second group emphasizes on the jhana which are made the object of vipassana meditation. That means, let us say, he enters into first jhana, and after getting out of first jhana, he contemplates on the first jhana. He contemplates on first jhana as impermanent and so on, and then he gets path. So the second group emphasizes on the jhana which is made the object of vipassana meditation. Now, please be clear that the object of vipassana and the basis of vipassana. The basis of vipassana means before practicing vipassana, he enters into this jhana. And then he emerges from this jhana and takes other things as object of vipassana meditation. Object of vipassana meditation means taking that jhana or contemplating on that jhana as impermanent and so on. So there is the basis jhana, contemplated jhana. So the first group emphasizes on the basis jhana, and the second group emphasizes on the contemplated jhana. But the third group emphasizes on one's own wish. It is a free country. So that does not mean that simply by making a wish you cannot get path. But suppose you enter into first jhana, and then you make the first jhana, second jhana, as a object of meditation. So what will the path like? According to the first group of teachers, your path will be like first jhana, right? According to the second group of teachers, your path will be like second jhana. What about the third group? They say that according to your wish. If you want the path to resemble first jhana, then your path will be that way. But if you want your path to resemble second jhana, then it will be like second jhana. So you have a choice there. So that choice or that wish comes not without jhanas. First, you have to have jhanas, and you make the jhana the basis of vipassana, and also you make the jhanas the object of vipassana, and then you choose from this. Sometimes you have a wish that may my path resemble first jhana, or may my path resemble second jhana. But it is said that if a person has no such wish, then the higher the path will resemble the higher jhana. For example, you enter into the first jhana, and you get out of it, and you make the second jhana the object of meditation, and then the path occurs. But if you have no wish, whatever path comes, I don't mind, then your path will resemble the second jhana because it is a higher one. So the higher jhana gets the precedence there. So in the following paragraph, you will find factor 7 or 6 or whatever. So Factor 7 means without what? Without right thought or vitakka. And 6 in enlightenment factors mean without PD, because in the fourth jhana, PD is missing, right? So there are these three kinds of opinions or theories. And the Visuddhi mother said that even according to these teachers, vipassana can be a deciding factor also. Not only the jhanas, but vipassana can also be the deciding factor. And then the progress on page 780, and that is some people can get enlightenment in a short time without much difficulty, but some have difficulty short time and so on. So there are different kinds of people. Now, if insight has from the start only been able to suppress defilement with difficulty, with effort and with prompting, then it is called of difficult progress. The opposite kind is called of easy progress and so on. And when the manifestation of the path, the goal of insight, is slowly effected after defilements have been suppressed, then it is called of sluggish direct knowledge. Now, here the goal of insight, the goal is not the correct translation of the word. I think the word here means stagnation. Stagnation of insight. That means a yogi has reached the knowledge of the equanimity about formations, and he is stuck there. He has to be doing that again and again and again. So if he has to spend a long time in that stage before reaching the path, then he is said to be of what? The sluggish direct knowledge. So the insight here is called stagnation, right? Still or something like that, because you have to be with this for a long time. So the manifestation of path which has this stagnation of insight, that means only after spending a long time with that knowledge there arises path. So that is called of sluggish direct knowledge. The opposite kind is called of swift direct knowledge. If you don't have to spend much time in that stage of knowledge, the equanimity about formations, and if you get to the path in a short time, then you are called of swift direct knowledge. So this equanimity about formation stands at the arrival point. That means as the source of giving names, as the source of name for path, and gives its own name to the path in each case, and so the path has four names according to the kind of progress. Now, you will find the phrase at the arrival point, at the arrival point. That is the literal translation of the Pali word. Not even quite literal. So the meaning is the source for giving name, or the source for the name, or the cause for the name. Now, for one bhikkhu, this progress is different in the four paths, while for another it is the same. For Buddhas, however, the four paths are of easy progress and swift direct knowledge. For Buddhas, everything is the best. but likewise, in the case of the general of the Dhamma, the elder Sariputta, so he is as good as the Buddha, so he's all the best. But in the elder Mahamoggallana's case, the first part was of easy progress and swift direct knowledge, because he became a Sotapanna just after listening to Sariputta uttering a verse. So at that time, it was of easy progress and swift direct knowledge. But the others were of difficult progress and sluggish direct knowledge, because he had to spend practicing meditation. And at one time he was sleepy, and Buddha went to him and told him how to get rid of sleepiness and so on. So for the other stages, he is said to be of difficult progress and sluggish direct knowledge. And then predominance. As with the kind of progress, so also with the kinds of predominance, which are different in the four paths for one bhikkhu and the same for another. So the four predominances are zeal, chanda, energy, consciousness, and inquiry. Inquiry really means understanding. And then liberation, but it has already been told how it governs the difference in liberation. Furthermore, the path gets its name for five reasons. And then path gets its name as signless, as desireless, as white, and others, for five reasons. The one is owing to its own nature, and two, owing to what it possesses. What it opposes, and three, owing to its own special quality, four, owing to its object, and five, owing to the way of arrival. Way of arrival means the source of name. Now the one, owing to its own nature, means owing to its functioning, how it functions, what function it does, so owing to its own nature. And the explanation follows. If equanimity about formations induces emergence by comprehending formations as impermanent, liberation takes place with the signless liberation, and so on. So these are the five reasons of how the path gets named as signless and so on. Now, paragraph 126. But while this name is inadmissible by the Abhidhamma method, it is, however, admissible by the Sotanta method. The name signless is not mentioned in Abhidhamma. So according to Abhidhamma, there can be no signless path. But by Sotanta method, by the discourse method, it is admissible. For, they say, by that method, change of lineage takes the name signless by making a signless nibbana its object. Now, change of lineage precedes path. So at the moment of change of lineage, it takes the nibbana as object. And nibbana is described as signless, desireless, and void. So if we take the signless aspect of nibbana, and the change of lineage takes that nibbana as object, and then the path follows, then the path is named through change of lineage being signless. So the path is also named signless. So according to Sotanta method, the path can get the name signless. But according to Abhidhamma, no. And its fruition can be called signless too, according to the path way of arrival. So, since path is called signless, the fruition which follows it is it could also be called signless. So, the change of lineage is a cause for the path to get the name signless, and the path is the cause for the fruition to get the name signless. So, in the Sotanta method, these can be called signless, or they get the name signless. But according to Abhidhamma method, they cannot be called signless. Lastly, contemplation of pain is called desireless because it arrives at the path by drying up desire for formations and so on. Okay, I think we'll stop here. So next time, conformity knowledge. We have 2 more weeks, right? 2 more classes, I mean.
Is the Abhidhamma method the jhana method?
Oh no. It is according to what is said and what is taught in Abhidhamma.
No, in the But they didn't talk about the jhanas along the being.
Yeah, jhanas are taught in the Tridharma.
But then some say that, you know, say that being is a jhana.
Abhidhamma is not necessarily jhana method. It can be jhana method or no jhana method.
Or vipassana?
Vipassana can be practiced unmixed with samatha, or it can be practiced with samatha. So there are two ways, say vipassana yanika and samatha yanika. Say one who has a vehicle of samatha and one who has vehicle of vipassana. So when we say one who has a vehicle of samatha, we mean that he practices samatha meditation first and gets jhana or gets samadhi, and then takes that jhana or samadhi as the object of meditation and then practices vipassana.
You can learn both of them though in the Bhima though, can't you? Both of them are talked about in the Bhima.
Both of them are taught in the discourses, Sutta Pitaka.
Yeah.
Yeah. In one sutta in Anguttara Nikaya Buddha talk about these two kinds of persons, say samatha. Samatha, one who has samatha as vehicle and the other who has vipassana as vehicle. So one who has vipassana as vehicle practices vipassana.